Accession number 27185, Real One.
Major Barras, Real One. Was there a family background, a military service?
Not immediately, no. Some of my mother's side had been in the army, some in the Irish Guards and the Cheshire Regiment. But the last one, I think, was her grandfather. On my father's side, we were in church, and had been in the church for a long time. His father was in the church. We had something like three bishops there. But I didn't, I don't know, I don't think I wanted to go into the church somehow. I think probably my father was encouraging me to go in the army to keep me out of the church, I think, probably. But no, I decided that, I think I rather got attracted to the army when I was sort of 15, 16, something like that age.
Do you remember what it was?
I can't remember really. I mean, I joined, we had the Officers Training Corps, OTC at school in those days. I joined that. I was taken up to London to see the changing guards and that sort of thing at Buckingham Palace. I think I took a fancy to the bands to begin with. And the sort of order of everything and the outside activity appealed to me. And then I joined the OTC. It was compulsory to join the OTC in those days. We all had to, unless you had a very good reason for not doing it. And I enjoyed it. We used to go on annual camps. I became a little sergeant major, company sergeant major in charge. I was also drum major of the band at one stage or the other. And it sort of, I think it sort of just began to develop naturally that I was going to go into the army.
So there wasn't a specific moment at which...
No light on the way to Damascus, no.
What was in the syllabus of training that you did in the OTC? Can you remember what sort of...
Well, I know we had to study for a thing called Certificate A, which was mostly to do with map reading, field craft, and that sort of thing. But, of course, we had to do... I mean, I was eventually captain of the shooting eight, and we used to go down to Bisley once a year to shoot in the Ashburton Shield. But so much of it was of use to me when I came into the army, actually, because I knew how to slope arms, I knew how to give orders, I knew all the formations which one was expected to do, all the things one did on route marches and whilst you were in camp and administration and so forth. I just knew how to do them. I won't say I knew the standard that I was expected to do them in the army, obviously. I mean, I had to... be trained for that when I came into the army.
When you did the annual camps, what sort of things did you do on those?
Well, there were about four or five locations where schools used to go on these OTC camps. There was one at Tidbeth, there was another one at Tweezledown, I remember, there was another one up in Yorkshire, I think. There were about three or four. And we used to go down in a special train, I remember, then I mean a long march to the camp, and it was all under canvas, obviously. There was a regular battalion there who sort of administered the camp. And we started off by doing small exercises amongst ourselves, gradually working up to sort of big exercises on the local, well, it might have been Salisbury Plain, depending where we were.
Up to what scale were you training?
I can't really remember, but I know the the regular army provided the enemy. I remember on one night they had to turn out to keep schools apart. There was a big, there used to be quite a lot of, towards the end of the camps, schools used to go, there used to be a sort of competition between them and that sort of thing, which was hereditary, I think. It had been going on for a long time. And I remember one day there's the Naffy caught fire, and the regular troops were called out, and they were around it with their fixed bayonets. So it was quite harmless, really, but I mean, it looked worse than it was, I think.
Can you remember if during these exercises on the annual camp the emphasis was on defensive operations or offensive operations?
Oh, I think we were on offensive, I think. Yes. It's so long ago now that it's very difficult for me to remember. But I seem to remember doing sort of attacks or approach to contact and that sort of thing. I don't remember sitting in slit trenches or standing in trenches waiting for the enemy to come. We may have done, but we always ended up, I know, in this big exercise where the enemy, well, the army entrenched and we had to attack them. But there was no sort of live ammunition or artillery or any of that sort of thing. We had blanks. And the good old thunder flashes, which I think are still being used, aren't they? Yeah.
As you remember it, you mentioned there was no artillery or anything like that. Do you remember on any of these annual camp exercises ever having artillery as part of the overall scenario?
I really
was it assumed
can't.
Or anything like that?
Whether we were expected to make plans to incorporate the artillery and tanks and that sort. No, I don't think we were.
Purely
I think they were
infantry.
Quite simple. Mm. I mean, we may have been told that there will be artillery barrage, but we weren't that sophisticated.
What sort of weapon training did you do? Did you use the Bren gun, or were you still with the Lewis gun at that stage?
We had one Lewis, I think, which we never used, but it was explained to us. We had the Lee Enfield rifle and the long bayonet, and we used to use that for field craft, and then we used to do map reading as well, and some patrolling too we used to do. And then now and again, a guard's drill sergeant would come down from London and put us through it a bit. So we were probably better at drill than anything else, I think, by the time he'd finished with us.
Do you remember doing any extensive training for night operations?
No, I don't. During the camps, I think we were out at night on some of those occasions, but at school, no, never. I don't remember ever going out.
Thinking back to that time and what happened afterwards, was the sort of tactical training you were doing roughly in line with what the army was doing at the time?
I think it probably was, yeah. Because, we really didn't start taking modern warfare seriously until after Dunkirk, quite honestly. So I think it was probably, we used to have instructors, quite apart from the guard sergeant, drill sergeant used to come down, we did have one or two from the local Essex regiment who used to come and give us lectures and that sort of thing.
Which school were you at?
Forest School, which is a public school. It's a small one, mostly in those days before the war, it was full of parson's sons, expatriates' sons, odd Maharajas, odd refugees, some of the Jews from Germany came there. It was a reasonably small school then. It was all boarders. I suppose we had about 300. But now it's completely changed now. So it's got 1,500, I think, and it's got a girls' element there. They're very good, but it's not the same. I don't think they've got anything like the boarders they used to have. It's all day school.
Do you know if many of the boys in the same year as you also decided they were going to join the army? Were you unusual in that?
No, there were one or two. Most of us then weren't thinking. Looking back, we weren't thinking of making money. I don't think we weren't encouraged to go into doing anything to make money. Most of us who left there went into the services, and I met them afterwards. Some went into law, some went into doctors, and so forth. And I suppose some went into their family companies. But I don't think anybody seriously sort of went out with the idea of making money like they do today. I mean, it was a question of, I think we're encouraged to serve.
You were growing up in the 1920s and 30s. Mm. Do you remember if you had any expectations that there was going to be another general war in Europe? And if so, when did they start to develop?
I don't think it started early. You see, when was it? It wasn't until 1938, wasn't it, when Chamberlain came back after the Munich crisis with a bit of paper. And everybody breathed. And it wasn't the country. I don't think most people looked upon it as appeasement. One has to remember that there were so many families from the First World War who were still harking back. I mean, it was only a short while ago. It's like the mid-80s now. Where somebody had either been killed or wounded, or they knew somebody who had. So there was, I think people breathed a sigh of relief. But I think after that, people began to think, maybe there's going to be a war. I certainly began to think about it. Chamberlain's thing was in September, wasn't it? And then we got another crisis when the Germans occupied Czechoslovakia completely in March the following year. And that was the time when everybody said, I felt there was no chance we were going to get away without a war.
So it was the occupation of Bohemia?
I think it was the occupation of the final occupation of Czechoslovakia which convinced everybody. I think people were beginning to worry a bit. The main concern then was bombs and gas. And fortunately, whatever money the government was prepared to spend on defence at that time, they spent on Spitfires, Hurricanes and a radar defence. Thank God. They certainly didn't spend it on the army very much.
At that time, do you remember if you had any ideas about who we would like to be fighting and if you ever thought that Italy might be an opponent as well as Germany?
No, I never considered Italy at that stage. I know that the Spanish Civil War, they got involved in that a bit. And, of course, they were involved in East Africa and Ethiopia. It may be after that, because it was where Eden resigned, didn't he? Because we didn't do anything about it at that time. And the League of Nations were completely useless. They did nothing. I can't ever remember thinking we were going to fight the Italians. We didn't like what they were doing. But if there was going to be a war, it was going to be the Germans again. But nobody really considered there was going to be one of them. Nobody had considered Hitler at that stage, I don't know. Well, got inside his mind.
What steps did you take towards joining the army?
Well, first of all, when I was at school, I sat for the RMC, Sandhurst as it was, RMC as it was at that stage. I passed the exam, but not high enough, because they cut the numbers at that time. You wouldn't believe it, would you, with the war coming up, but they did. My mind, when I was at school, was more outside than inside, and I was much more interested in sport and everything else rather than my academic matters at that time. So when I took the exam, although I passed it, most of my marks came from what was called the interview and record at that stage, where I got 230 out of 250. But when it came to the other subjects, I don't think I got very much.
What were the subjects that you had to...
I can't remember now. I'm sure that the languages was there. French was one of them. They weren't military things at all. I mean, it wasn't sort of military papers or anything. They were still school... subjects which you would expect to learn at school, because you didn't... I mean, I got no special training for it, so...
There wasn't an army class as such?
No, but I believe there were crammers at that time where you could go to and cram up, but I suppose they only took the subjects which were on the agenda for the entrance exam.
What did you do then? So you took the RMC exam and you passed, but...
But failed.
Yeah. We're not selected. You weren't high enough.
No, I wasn't high enough.
Passes,
up
yes.
The numbers, yes. So, well, after that, I don't know how we got to hear about it, but there was a thing in those days called the Supplementary Reserve of Officers. The idea was that if I could get a commission in the SRO, as it was known, I could then go on and take an exam to go into the regular army that way. So I don't know how we heard of it, but I think my father went to see the CO of the depot of the Essex Regiment at that time, who was Major Blessed, who I was to know very well right up to the time he was Brigadier later. and found out about it, and I had an interview there. I think there was a sort of board of officers. I had to see the colonel of the regiment. And I said, okay, come on in.
Had you then already decided that you wanted to go into the Essex Regiment?
Yes. Oh, yes.
But why was that? Why
we were living in Essex, and it wasn't quite often the thing to do in those days was to join a county regiment. And we'd been in Essex. I was educated in Essex, lived in Essex. It was a natural thing to do.
Go to the local outfit.
Yeah.
What were they interested in when they interviewed you?
I really can't remember now. I think they were trying to find out. I mean, I was able, obviously, to talk about what I'd learnt in the OTC at school as one side of it. I think they were more interested in trying to find out whether what my personality and likely talents were being, whether I'd fit in and make an officer as opposed to having knowledge which they could give me after I'd joined.
And how did this procedure go on then? How did you carry on?
Well, I was commissioned. I got a commission from the King, got a uniform, and then I had to go to the depot. This was October 1938. I went to the depot for training, and I think it was about 6 weeks, 2 months I was there. And I was an officer, so I lived in the officer's mess, but my training was with the recruits.
So did you go through the basic training?
I went through everything they had to do. Mm. So what used to happen is when I went on parade, I was the only officer there at the time who was doing this. The sergeant or whoever was in charge of the parade would call the recruits up to attention. He would then invite me to join the parade. I would then go join the parade and go around the back, and then had to go through everything that they did. And if I didn't do it properly, I was jolly well told so. Once I was on parade, that was it. He was in charge. And one thing I always remember is in the gym, we had these APTC instructors there. There was a sergeant and a corporal. They wore these jerseys with horizontal black and red stripes. Indy rubber men, we used to call them. And they were very strict, and I remember on one occasion, this must have been about November after I joined, it was a very cold day, something had happened. I don't know whether somebody had done something or whether we went up to standard, and the sergeant said, right, if that happens again, everybody's going through the shower. And whatever it was happened, he said, it happened again. So we all had to go through the cold shower. I had to go through with them as well. We all came out the other end dripping cold and shivering like drowned rats, and we spent the rest of the morning running around the gym trying to get warm again. I was glad to get back to the mess and get into a hot bath, I think, after that.
So
you wouldn't get away with that today.
On the syllabus training, you mentioned doing drill, presumably
yes.
Foot drill on the square.
Yeah.
Physical training, what other things were?
Well, there was all the things which a recruit was expected to know. I mean, there were all kinds of lectures. The regimental history was terribly important in those days. Medical side, there was all the how to behave, what you was expected of them, and so forth. And then there was outside, of course, there was the weapon training, individual field craft. There was a little shooting on the range, but ammunition in those days was very strictly limited. And I think we used to go on inside on the 2.2 rifle range. I think there was a 30-yard outside full bore range with the Lee Enfield rifle, which we used to use. But I don't remember ever going on the long ranges whilst I was in the depot.
How many recruits were there in that squad?
I just can't remember now. There must have been 20 or 30, I suppose. They were divided up. They weren't all together. Mm. But there must have been about a platoon's worth, I would think. Small platoon, not a sort of 30, not as much as that, I wouldn't think.
Were they all from Essex? Were they local men?
A lot of them came from Essex. Some came from Suffolk. But a lot of them came from the East End of London. Mm. So we were Cockneys. So we had a good leavening of countrymen and East Enders.
How did you get on with them?
Oh, marvellous. Well, I mean, I say marvellously. I don't know what they thought. That's another thing. But when I was very young, from about the age of 1 to 5, I think it was. My father was a curate in the East End of London, and I spent my early formative years in the East End of London amongst the East Enders. So it rather got into my bones, I think. So when they spoke, I thought I understood them. I put it that way. I had a sort of feeling for them.
Do you know why they joined up? What their reasons were for joining the army?
It's very difficult. Of course, there was a lot of unemployment at that time. One has to recognise that. I wouldn't like to say. I think some genuinely joined the army. There was a lot of families in it, of course. Father was sergeant major, and their son came in, and so forth.
Hereditary soldiers.
Yes. There was some of that. There was the unemployment aspect. And there was the question of some of them genuinely wanted to come into the army because it appealed to them.
When you were doing this PT, did you find it difficult, or were you already fairly fit when you went to the depot?
Oh, no, I may not have been mentally attuned at that time, but I was certainly physically fit, yes. That didn't worry me at all. I used to do a lot of running and athletics when I was at school.
What was the focus on? Was it on strength or agility or endurance?
I think that's awfully difficult to say. I mean, obviously they were there. To tune them up so that they could fit into the battalion when they got there. They'd obviously have to be fit when they got there. They'd have to know all about their rifles and weapons. They would have to know how the field craft, and they'd have to know about drill. They were very basic, a lot of the stuff which was taught at the depot. You weren't being taught there to be an NCO. You were merely taught to be a private soldier. You had to accept discipline. Now, it wasn't so difficult in those days because there was much more discipline in the school and the family. And one of the things is, of course, they all turned up wearing boots, because most of them wore boots in those days, so they don't have the problems which they perhaps have today with trainers and that sort of thing. So I think we found teaching recruits much easier those days than perhaps they do now.
And how about you? Did you find the army discipline stricter than that at school, or about the same? Or?
Oh, it was obviously stricter than it was at school. I was expected to do things quicker and more efficiently, I think. But then I was pretty enthusiastic. I mean, I really was glad to be in the army. I wanted to be in the army. And I took to it like a sort of duck to water, really. Nothing bothered me very much, I don't think. I never had any ambition of being a field marshal. I just didn't think about ahead. I just took each day as it came and enjoyed it.
But what happened to you after your period of recruit training then? Did you go on with that batch of recruits?
No.
Advanced training.
After that, I went across to the 2nd Battalion, the Essex Regiment, which was also stationed at Worley. It's quite unusual to have the depot and the battalion close by like that. But I was taken across to the... I was put across to the 2nd Battalion. Of course, as a supplementary reserve officer, I wasn't a permanent officer. And I can't remember now what the commitment of training each year was. I think it was quite extensive. I mean, it was at least a month or more. And I mean, you had to be a gentleman of leisure to be in the SRO, or were keen, like I was, to get a regular commission. But what I did, having got there, I did my I was required to do. They'd more or less accepted the fact that I was going to be wanted to be a regular that time, and I think they'd accepted the accepted me as a candidate for a regular commission. And I said, I'd like to stay. They said, you can stay on if you want, at your own expense. So I did. It wasn't my expense, it was my father's expense, actually. But I spent most of that year with them, right up to the war, apart from the fact I went to a crammer's.
I mean, had you taken up a civil occupation after leaving school or not?
No.
And you hadn't got one in mind?
No, nothing at all. I went straight almost... within a few months I went into the idea of the SRA came up after I left school.
Yes.
Well, of course, it takes some time for it to filter through and actually happen. So there wasn't much point in my going off and doing anything else. I wasn't interested in doing anything else, quite honestly.
What did they do with you at 2nd Battalion when you arrived and October 1938?
Well, I was lucky enough to be given command of a platoon. I remember that.
So you arrived in a platoon of regular soldiers.
Yeah.
And how did they receive you when you first...
That seemed all right. I didn't have any problems. I mean, they were very, very highly disciplined in those days. Well, I'm sure they are now, of course. But, I mean, there was a mixture of soldiers. And there was, you see... What happened, well, as I'm sure you know, you remember the Cardwell system where you had one battalion abroad and one at home. We were the home battalion, and the battalion, this battalion, had been abroad in India for 17 years, if you please, before it came back. And it only recently came back. So there was a mixture of soldiers in the battalion at that time. There were the young ones who come from the depot, and then there were those who come back from abroad, either waiting discharge, demobilisation to the reserve, because as you may remember, Soda did 7 years on the colours, five on the reserve, although that was reversed later, you were allowed to do five and seven. So I don't know what the overseas commitment was in those days, but it was pretty long. But anyway, the platoon was had a combination of both older soldiers and the young ones. And I don't know, I don't remember any problems at all.
Was the platoon up to strength?
No, I don't think it was. The 2nd Battalion wasn't up to strength. Because the idea in those days was to keep the overseas battalion up to strength, which was the 1st Battalion at that time was in Egypt. So when they called for a draft, then we had to find it from the 2nd Battalion. It didn't go from the depot, because they came from the depot to us and then out to the 1st Battalion. So the home battalion was under strength, yes.
What did you do with them day by day? What would a standard routine working day be like?
Well, it was mostly individual training at that time. It was much more the same as I was doing in the depot, only I was in charge, for my platoon anyway. We used to go out on company exercises. I can remember going out at night on patrolling and that sort of thing, and doing night attacks. But... I don't remember doing a battalion exercise. We never got involved with formation exercises, although there used to be what they called the autumn manoeuvres, I remember, which used to take place down Salisbury Plain or somewhere. But we didn't go down for that. Not that I was with them in the autumn. We used to go on route marches, quite a few route marches. But sophisticated training really didn't happen. I mean, I don't remember cooperating with artillery and tanks. I never saw a tank. I didn't see any tanks till after I got back after Dunkirk in the UK. That's the first time I saw any of our tanks.
Did you generate your own training program, or was it centrally generated from?
Well, I think there was a program obviously got out by the CO for each company to achieve, and then the company commander would then get out his program. So you started and worked up to something like a company exercise or something like that. But I can't honestly put my hand on my heart and say it was very sophisticated training. Nearer towards the war, we started digging trenches, I remember. Now, whether we were being taught to dig them for war or whether we were digging them because we thought we were going to need them, I don't know.
What sort of trenches were they? Were they continuous lines of entrenchment?
No, they were what became known as slip trenches.
Were these one-man slip trenches? Or
no,
were
I
they
think
were
they
multiple?
Were. They were more than that. Mm. I mean, they became two-man slip trenches, I think, as far as I remember, in the war. These were longer, yeah. Mm. I think after some experiences during the war, it was discovered that they needed to be smaller in order to avoid casualties from shelling and that sort of thing.
What's the style of the attacks you were doing? The same kind of thing as you've been doing at the OTC summer camp?
No, it was...
How is it different?
I don't know. I can't really explain it. I think we were amateurs in the camp. But this was hand